Mr. Beckwind?
Yes.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your patience. Could you please start by stating your full name and your ABC number for the record?
It's Martin Bentley. The ABC number is 243-662.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a revocation hearing concerning the three allegations that are on your warrant. You were notified about this hearing on January 2nd. You signed a form that day. Do you remember signing that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. On that form is a list of your hearing rights, and one of your rights is that you can hire at your expense an attorney to represent you. Did you hire an attorney today, sir, or will you represent yourself in this hearing?
No, I represent myself.
Okay. That's fine. I'd like to introduce you to the members of the board. Let's go on. Okay. Sitting at the far end, or just coming back to a seat at the far end, is the Honorable Lee Quinones. Next to him is the Honorable David Neal. Over on my other side here is the Honorable Michael Johnson. My name's Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct your hearing. We also have in the room with us today, representing the Department of Corrections and your parole officer, the Honorable Mr. Turner. There you can see Mr. Turner on the screen now.
Yes, ma'am.
And as I mentioned, he'll represent your parole officer in the hearing today. So I need to swear the both of you in. I also see that you have a number of supporters in the room. And are any of you planning to speak today? Okay. So that's Mr. Martin Pentland?
Yes.
That's you, okay. And I have Jennifer
Peace.
Peace?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
And are you planning to speak?
Yes.
Okay, and who else? Are you just the two of you?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Then I need to swear the four of you in. So, Mr. Pentland, the younger, Mr. Pentland, the older, Ms. Pease, and Mr. Turner. Do you solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God, and do you so affirm? Mr. Pentland?
Yes.
Mr. Pentland?
I do.
Ms. Pease?
I do.
Mr. Turner. Thank you. All right. I'll get this camera back over here. Mr. Pentland, your hearing will be conducted in two phases, with phase one to determine if you violated the terms and conditions of community supervision, and then phase two to determine if that supervision should be reinstated or revoked. So for phase one, what I'm going to do is I'll read each of these allegations to you, and I'll just need you to respond if they're true or false. Okay, sir? So we'll start phase one of your hearing. And the first allegation is that you were in violation of condition number 7, as demonstrated by your use of methamphetamine on or about October 29, 2018, per the TASC GCMS lab report dated November 1st, 2018. Mr. Pentland, is this true or false?
Yeah, I accept full responsibility for it.
So is it true or false, sir?
It's true.
Okay. The second allegation is that you were in violation of condition number 7 as demonstrated by your failure to submit a urine specimen for drug testing on or about November 21st, 2018 per the TASC individual testing compliance summary dated December 5th, 2018. Mr. Pentland, is that true or false?
That's false.
That's false? Okay.
Yes.
And we'll go on to allegation number 3, and that is that you're in violation of condition number 7, as demonstrated by your use of methamphetamine on or about November 29, 2018, per the TASC LCMS lab report dated December 7, 2018. Is that true or false, Mr. Pentland?
That's false.
That's false. Okay. Since you've testified that allegations number 2 and 3 are false, we're going to take testimony from Mr. Turner of the Department of Corrections, and then we'll discuss those allegations. So, Mr. Turner, if you would read allegation number 2 and 3.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Allegation number 2. On 11/21/2018, the offender was required to submit a UA per task individual compliance summary dated 12/5/2018. However, the offender filled the report into a TASC facility to submit his UA. For the TASC instruction and reporting being based on an automated system regarding the offender to call in and enter his or her birthday and to sign PIN code provided by the parole officer at the time of his initial intake, per the task compliance report dated 12/5/2018, it specifically stated that the offender called in at 11:26 a.m. However, he still failed to report to task to submit a UA police attached exhibit. Follow-up number two. On 11/27/2018, P.O. Phillips telephoned the offender and he stated, "I've been calling every day, Phillips." The offender denied the use of any illicit substance or alcohol. He was directed to report in the task and submit a sample on this date. He was reminded to not consume any more than 16 to 20 ounces of fluids 2 hours prior. On 11/28/2018, P.O. Phillips pulled the task records and per the offender's compliance summary, he failed to submit a UA verbally directed on 11/27/2018. During a phone conversation with the offender on 11/28/2018, he stated that he went to the Mesa location and that he went later in the evening. On 11/29/2018, the offender telephoned this PO and stated that task advised him that his temperatures were not accurate. The offender was directed to report into the parole office for staffing. After numerous attempts to direct the offender to report to task and submit a UA, PO Phillips was provided with a task IR incident report dated 11/28/2018 that while trying to provide a specimen, he attempted to conceal himself. Additionally, the sample provided was below acceptable limits as the temperature reading of the UA was 74 degrees. Please see exhibit incident report.
Okay, since that one's kind of long, we'll go ahead and... Mr. Pendleton, what's not true about that allegation?
The third one?
No, the second one, the one that Mr. Turner just read.
Okay, the second one, I didn't provide a sample, but he wanted more than half. When he first told me, I just need half of the little container that they gave you, he wanted half, so I gave him half, and he gave back to me, so I need more than half.
Well, sir, what Mr. Turner just read says that the sample you submitted was at 74 degrees, which would indicate it didn't come from your body.
I mean, they're watching you, so you can't really do anything.
Well, sir, Mr. Pentland, the incident report says that, and I'll just read it to you, when Mr. Pentland came to the testing area at 1721, which is 5:20. I asked, and this is the technician wrote this, if he had tested with us before, which he replied yes. Mr. Pentland then entered the testing area to provide a sample to which he attempted to conceal himself from full frontal view. Before I could correct Mr. Pentland, he provided the sample and it read at 74 degrees. I then informed Mr. Pentland that an incident report will be filed and to get in contact with his referring agency. So Mr. Pentland, while you may have provided a sample, it was 74 degrees, sir.
That's the thing I didn't understand, and I asked him, he told me, the person that was working there told me, you have to explain that to your parole officer, and that's what I did. The next morning, I called my PO, and I informed him of what was going on, and that's when he called me in. And I explained that to Officer Phillips.
Okay, sir. I'm going to go on to allegation number three. Mr. Turner, could you please provide some testimony there?
Yes, ma'am. Allegation number three. On 11/29/2018, and was staffed with SBO Breda and PO Phillips, at that time the offender submitted a saliva buccal swab prior to the offender submitting the buccal swab. He was asked if he had been using under the influence of any illicit substance or alcohol, which he claimed he had not been using any illicit substance or alcohol. Per the task LCMS report dated 12/7/2018, the offender's saliva sample submitted on 11/29/2018 tested positive for methamphetamine C exhibit. Follow-up, the offender was taken into custody without incident by transportation team on this warrant.
So, Mr. Pentland, what's false about that allegation?
They never did the saliva test.
Well, Mr. Turner just testified that they tested you.
No, he made me go UA again, so I did. I went to task 3 days in a row, and I provided a sample 3 times. But the saliva, they never did that.
Well, Mr. Fentland, we've had testimony from the Department of Corrections that is to the contrary of that statement. So I'm going to go ahead and move this hearing from phase one to phase two, and that is, I'll make a motion that says, based on information in this warrant, warrant 2018W3450, with regards to allegation number one, it will be based on Mr. Penton's admission, and regarding allegations number two and three, it will be based on testimony of Mr. Turner from the Department of Corrections. I move to find Mr. Penton was delinquent as he violated the terms and conditions of his supervision and may have lapsed or had lapsed in the criminal vice or company.
Second.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay, motion by myself, second to Mr. Johnson. Agreed. Mr. Neal, Mr. Quinones. Okay, Mr. Penton, we'll move to phase two of your hearing, which is the portion where we determine whether your supervision should be reinstated or revoked, sir. But before we do that, I'm going to ask Mr. Turner to give us all some background information about your case. So just stay on the phone, and we'll be right back to talk with you some more in just a minute. Thank you. Mr. Turner.
Yes, ma'am. Pentland was released from ADC custody on 8/16/2018 and arrested on 11/29/2018 by ADC on a text violation. No new charges are noted. He's returned back to ADC custody on 11/29/2018 with a CSED of 12/15/2020, zero abscondates. Current conviction, 2009, kidnapping, 10 years, 6 months. He has no prior convictions. This is his first term in ADC with a CUIR score of 4.4. Mental health score of 2, substance abuse score of 1. He has no STG information noted and no prior terms of supervision. Disciplinary is significant with criminal damage, violence, promoting contraband, and drugs noted. Other arrest, 2009, sexual conduct with a minor, Arizona, unknown. Other information, he has a GV score of G1, V3. He is a level 2 sex offender that is registrable, notifiable, SVP reviewable. DCAC is cited in the court docs. The victim was 14 years old.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Turner. Trying to turn all that down. Okay, back to you, Mr. Pentland. We have a written summary of what occurred while you were on supervision. And it looks like you were originally released without an approved residence, kind of in that area near the parole office. And
it was on.
Yeah, 16th and Buckeye, right at first.
They released me on, I went to Black Canyon Highway and I don't remember the other, yes.
Is it the Budget Lodge? It would have been 8617 Black Canyon Highway?
Yes.
Something like that. Okay, yeah. We've encountered that place before. Okay, and then you were able to, your parents were able to get you an apartment at 3738 East McDowell?
Yes, ma'am.
And did you live anywhere else besides those places?
No, ma'am.
Okay. And were you working?
No, but I was looking.
Okay. What kind of work do you do, sir? What kind of skills do you have?
Well, I went to a discount tire, I went to AutoZone. I like things like mechanic.
So like auto kind
yes.
of work? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, that's a good trade to have because everybody's got a car, just about. Lots of cars around. Okay, and then also it looks like you were, as we know, responsible to provide samples to TASC. And it looks like you had one on the 29th, that was part of this warrant that tested positive for meth, and one on the 30th that tested positive for meth. And on the 21st of November, there was a fail to submit. And then on the 27th of November, there's a submittal, but the temperature was out of range. That's the one that was 74 degrees, so it wasn't accepted. And then on the 29th, 2 days later, there was the oral swab that tested positive. And you were placed into CHC for the substance abuse and methamphetamine use. Had you had a methamphetamine problem for some time?
No, ma'am. No.
How did you come to use methamphetamine?
That's, I can't explain it. It's just the people that I was hanging around with.
Okay, and they gave it to you, or?
It's bad choices of me hanging around those people. It's hard for me to explain, because I don't know what they do behind my back.
All right, so this was the first time you ever used methamphetamine?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, now we have kind of a lengthy summary, so I'm going to have to just ask your indulgence while we all read this, because it's two-thirds of a page, single space. So give us just a moment to read this. Okay, I've only read about a third of this, and it just appears, sir, that you were having a lot of difficulty complying with your conditions. For example, you were having difficulty refraining from using methamphetamine. You admitted to using it, looks like a couple of times here. Your parole officer went to your residence, and there was a butcher's knife in your bedroom by your bed. Knife belongs in the kitchen, not next to your bed. But you also had vodka in your freezer, so that would be a violation. You're not allowed to drink alcohol while you're on supervision. And you also had children's movies in the place. And I can't tell if this is later or not, but there was also children's clothing in the house, even though you were not permitted to have any children's clothing or children's items. And you did not have your not participating in Halloween sign displayed in your window on the night of Halloween. There are the examples of, and I'll just try to speed read this, examples where you were not submitting UAs when you were supposed to. And then there was the one with the temperature was not appropriate. So, sir, how do you explain? You understand when you're on community supervision, you signed conditions that said that you would comply with various things, and that's part of the deal about being on community supervision, is you agree to certain things. How do you explain these things, sir?
I can't.
Okay. All right. I'm going to see if my fellow board members have any questions for you. Does anyone have a question? Or Mr. Mill has a question for you, sir.
Yes, sir. I see in the sanctions section toward the end of it, you were being staffed at 801 and they were talking about the task issues, and you claimed that you had checked it on the task application on your father's phone, and then it was your mother's phone, and then when P.O. Phillips went out and talked to your father in the parking lot, he said it was your phone, and when P.O. Phillips came back in and discussed that with you, you said your father was a fucking liar?
Say that, but they were asking about a phone, and I don't have a phone. They belong to my parents. Those phones belong to my parents, and he knew about them. That's why I used to check.
Okay,
I don't have a phone.
So you didn't make that comment that he put in this one?
I didn't make that comment.
Okay. No further question.
The only thing that I said was, he's lying. That's the only thing I said, but I never said he's a fucking liar. Sorry, my language.
Okay. All right, Mr. Johnson has a question for you as well.
So you have family here. We have some really, really good support letters that your family has wrote. And what I'm trying to understand is that you have a continued use of methamphetamine, and they tried to put you in programs. What is it going to take for you to really get yourself together?
I know that I got my goals in life, and I was looking for a job. I was going to go to school for welding. I was going to start in February for it, but I was taking that class, that CHC class, and I was going to the other with a therapist. So I had to figure out how to fit my schedule with those two classes so I get a job and go to the other school that I wanted to go to too. Because I got a goal in life. I want to become somebody like. The first time that I lived here was 9 years. Yes, it was a long time. And it took me that long to realize who I really wanted to be. But I know I can move forward and be somebody in life, and I'm going to achieve my goals.
I understand that, sir, but the reason I'm asking is because you were released on August 16th, and from September through November, you continued to use methamphetamine. Either you didn't provide one or you continued to use it. You still came under that. But all the things that were going on, I mean, you have to make a decision yourself, well, you know, that you want to get off drugs.
You're exactly right, sir. And like I said, I take full responsibility. The people that I hang out around with that kept messing my life up, and it happened again.
Okay, thank you, sir.
So, Mr. Pentland, what are your goals in life?
First is get a job. Go to school, get my education, then get a job for the things that I'm studying for, like welding. Like, I like welding, and I'm going to do it.
Well, that's a good career to have, that's for sure. Okay, sir. All right, any other questions from the board? I'm sorry. I'm going to go to your supporter, sir, and Mr. Well, whoever wants to come up first, I don't want to say who has to go first. Thank you. Welcome. And please state your name. You know the drill by now.
Right. My name is Martin Fenton. I'm Martin's father. With all the respect of you, we had him a long time away. And ever since he got out on parole, I was with him. You were correct. They would have him to the street of Buckeye. We got him a hotel. Ever since it was kind of a Thursday or Friday. On Monday, we couldn't find a place for him to live. They gave him a chance 3 days to go to a hotel or a place to sleep, because I didn't want him to sleep on the street. Buckeye is a Burger King in the corner. If you go at night, you're going to see a full of people there. I didn't want him to sleep there. So we went to the hotel. We got he was authorized 3 days. The next day, we called the officer Phil. We've been calling him constantly what we can do. We didn't know the rules. And I don't know yet. We can't know what to do, how we can help him to go on with his life. We had to call the parole to know what to do, where to live. We look everywhere for apartments. You're going to see there all the apartments that we look for. Some applications, you don't even fill it up when they deny it. You're denied because you have a criminal history. How are you going to get a place to sleep or something like that? Okay, we look all over around, and Philip, the parole officer, we talked to him, hey, is this place okay? No, you have to close. He said, go to Badger Lodge. Okay, so, because we didn't have no more time. So we went there for 2 weeks. And he came to register because he needed to register his address, the courthouse. From there, we went to the to the office of parole. And he gave us an idea where to look for jobs because we have been looking. I took him. The name of the place was Trentwood, down by, I don't know, 15 Avenue, it was around there, on the 822. There's a copy of the application. And we kept looking and looking for the classes. I mean, we look for classes, for jobs. My other son paint houses, we fix roofs, we call Pearl, can he fix houses? Can we take him to look? No, we can't go do that because houses, people inside, okay, it couldn't work. Well, he got a delivery offer, he can't deliver. Okay, went to Discount, like he said, the closest we got was Discount Tire. They sent him to do a urine test. We did it, there's a copy there. Philip has a copy of what they, all the places he applied. And the thing is, like for the programs, the CS program, there we went right away when he got his, it was like on Halloween, one of those days, I don't know if it was the 30th, I went to pick him up, and we went, he gave us a schedule, first copy of the schedule, and we started the next Tuesday. And like, I heard in the morning the Deer Valley program, we called that place, because Officer Phillip, when we got the apartment, said, you, I want to give you a program so you can go and get that EPS. Okay, so we started calling that place. We never got our response. All the time we called, they would say, oh, I need to check with the parole officer and authorize it. Okay, we waited and waited and waited. Until, I don't know, maybe a month and a half, the EPS broke down and another parole officer, Frank, when at night, I mean, he was so, we went over all the rules. I mean, he's supposed to be at 9, we would be there like 2 hours before because at 7, he wanted to go, he wanted to be there. He doesn't want to break the rules, he wants to be somebody in black. And we started looking for schools and jobs every day. Even from that day, that parole officer, Frank, while he was teaching the program, he said, you know, because we mentioned about the Deer Valley School. He said, you know, I don't know why they didn't tell you about the AC Center. They'll get you right away. We got that information, and we went there. It probably took him like a week or two. We went for the interview for him. There was a copy there where we gave him the class, what time he was going to start, and the therapist and everything. And when we got that day, I think it was going to be like Thanksgiving. I don't know if they changed. We called if we were supposed to go. They changed it to the next week. So on the way to the school, it was going to start on the 29th. That's when Officer Phillip called. We went to his office. That's when detained him. He told me about the, I didn't know about the, at that time I didn't know about the test they did. I'm going to correct you on the phone because I was there in the car and Philip knew, the parole officer knew even before he got out that he didn't have phone, he communicated through me. And every time that Philip called him, he communicated through me. If I wasn't close to him, I would go and pick him up and call him. The last time he did, I wasn't close to him, that's why he used his mother phone. But he came out to the car, I was sitting in the car waiting for him, and he came out and said, he knocked on the window, hey, where's the Martin phone that he uses? Oh, it's mine. No, the other one that he uses, I want to use his mom's phone. Well, I had it on the car, here's the phone. Okay, but he said, this is the phone, but it's not Martin's phone. And he said, the officer told me, if he tells me the truth, I'm not going to write him down. But he never, and I said, well, he's going to tell the truth because that's not his phone. It's her mother's phone. So, I mean, he could have lied because it wasn't his phone. And even he said, I'm going to get a phone when I get a job and I get a... Oh, sorry.
Okay, sir. Mr.
Quinones,
says for
just a quick question. Mr. Trentwood, real quick. I think you have a large family just like yours.
Right.
And, I mean, I sense the loyalty and the love.
Yeah.
My concern is, and I think what you're saying is important and supportive, but Martin said something a little while ago about becoming a lawyer. He said, I'm going to do it. And he needs to have that attitude about not using methamphetamine anymore and who he hangs out with. Right. That's why we're here.
Right.
I think all what you're saying about the other issues is just magnificent support from the family.
Right.
But he's got to decide for himself with that same I'm going to do it, that he's going to stay away from methamphetamine and that sort of company, or we're going to end up here again.
No, I'm sorry.
No, I'm not scolding you. I'm showing respect to your family.
I was going to that point. I mean, I'm trying to get everything because of the phone. I mean, I was going to that point. I mean, and he mentioned that he got positive in September. He got positive in September. I have a record on the test. We have the application. We check every day in the morning. Okay, and like he said, hanging out with the wrong people. You know the place where he lived? I mean, we couldn't find any apartment. The place we found for him to sleep is full of people that they use this. So how explain to me, he had 9 years in prison. No, there's a woman, there's a time, I mean, everybody closes the door. We couldn't find a good apartment to have him alone. Not getting a job, having a hard time, I mean, trying to go into school. But when you say, he said he needs to set his mind and say, I'm going to do this, I mean, stay away from this. And he got with that goal, I mean, when he got out, I don't want to go back. I want to stay here. I miss a lot of time with the family, and I want to move forward. But I mean, anything moves fast. Like I told him, it takes time. We need to be patient, and be patient, and make a step at a time. I mean, but even me, I felt hard to the place where they put him to leave, to live where he lived, because even in my mind, I mean, it was full of mana. I mean, people using, you don't know how what's gonna happen. Right? And I tried to explain it to him. I mean, and he knows, and even in the school, he was ready for the school. The administrator and the director, they talked to the parole supervisor. We had everything set up. We couldn't find a job, so okay. And I told them, let's set the programs first, and set the school, and go to school. We're going to figure out to get you a job. And even a parole officer gave him a business card. And we worked on the way to school. And then we made a call to the business card. After school, we were going to see that job and see if they were, you know, on that day on the 29th when he was detained. But I mean, all of that for him and not another chance for him. We haven't lived for a long time. Well, yesterday he had 10 years in jail, most of his young life in jail. It was a hard time in 2 months to go back. And she mentioned earlier, I hope you have a good luck with the phone. I don't know who said, oh, you said it with the phones today. I mean, even that, I mean, it's a hard time to get. In 1 month or 2 months, it's hard to go on that. I mean, get everything straight on that. And I'm all behind him. I missed him. And I love him. And I'm going to support him. And I'm going to, if I know all this problem, I'll get him to move forward. He wants to move forward. And he's strong. I know he's strong. But he had a hard, young life. And he lived it. And I want to try to get him forward. I'm just asking another chance to move forward and push him forward. And I got everything ready or whatever. And I appreciate it. Hearing me, and thank you.
Mr. Johnson has questions for a thing.
Mr. Penman, I'm going to tell you that my heart goes out to you. You know, there's not many parents that have would take and go through what you've gone through to get your son done. But I hear about the school, I hear about the apartment, I hear about him wanting to work, and the family support. Your family's been here all day. It's a long time. We've heard all kind of cases here today. But here's my concern, and I'm wondering if, you know, my question to you is just how are you going to deal with the issue that your son has a drug problem, and the drug problem is methamphetamine. And so until he gets that resolved, he's going to have a hard time with school, the other things that he wants to accomplish. And he's not really, I don't hear him admitting that I have a drug problem, I need to take care of that. I hear him talk about everything else, but denying basically the drug problem.
Right. Correct. Right this way. I mentioned first in the phone, we need to do these programs, and whatever the programs you need to do first, or the help you need first, then we go to school. This way he needs to start a school, because he could have started school on this, kind of remember the set date for the AAI. He could have started right away, but I told him, we still have the programs to finish, and whatever else you need to do first, so we take care of that, so you can get yourself straight. I mean, look, he just said it. I mean, then go to school. How are you going to take care of school if you have all these problems? And those programs, you need to take them. I mean, you can't leave those programs and go to school. So that's why, that's one of the main, you said it, that's correct. I mean, do the programs first, and then we take that out step.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you again for being so patient today. Gosh, it was a long day. And Ms. Pease, would you like to come up?
Absolutely.
And just state your name for the record, even though we know who you are.
Jennifer Pease.
Thank you.
Yeah. I actually reconnected with Martine back early November. I think I've been his longest withstanding friend. I've been friends with Martine since we were 13 years old in middle school. I'm sure he doesn't want to hear it, but Martine has lied to me since then, and I think I've been in love with Martine since I was about 21 years old. So I kind of know the old Martine versus this new Martine, where he missed out on all of the teen years and our 21st birthday and all that good stuff. But when I started hanging out with Martine, during the time frame that, because he told me right when we had connected that he did have an ankle monitor on and that he needed to be back at his house at 9 o'clock, and we were always before that, so any sort of uncertainty that I felt from him or any sort of nervous anxiety, I always took him back. And again, this is from hanging out just after when I got off work. And with all due respect, with the allegation number two, with this, I think it was number two, with the 74 degrees, I was actually with Martine on that Wednesday, and I'm actually the one that took him to UA. And we were driving there, and I picked him up at right about 4:30, and we went straight to UA because he told me, hey, I've got to go here. Do you mind taking me over in East Mesa? And I said that was fine. So we went over there, and we got there around 5:20, 5:15, 5:20, and Martine was a little nervous at first, just because of the amount of people and how he had been away for so long. And so I kind of talked him off, hey, you know what? Take a minute, just go ahead and go in there. I'm sure there's a lot of people, but this is something that you have to do and you have to follow. Right before that, he took a couple sips of water, went inside with no water bottles in pockets or anything like that, because he said he had to strip down and take the test. So I sat in the parking lot for about 20 minutes until he came out, and within that time frame, I probably saw about 20 people go into that same building. They were coming from all over the parking lot going in and out, so I'm not too sure how many can hold, but just justifying that I was there. I'm the one that took him to UA on that Wednesday, but the last Wednesday that I saw him. From then, again, when we had reconnected, he would always say that he had these goals in mind and that he wanted to go back to school, and welding was of interest, and he got his GED over there in prison while he was gone. And just kind of letting him talk and tell me things that I had missed out on. Way back when he first was imprisoned, he had written me a letter that was actually given to his cousin, and his cousin had passed it to me senior year of high school, and I regret not writing him back and not seeing him for 10 years. It was an extremely long time, even though I thought about him. I couldn't get up the courage to write him back because that's not how I had remembered Martine being in high school and in middle school prior to that. But again, back to with him just speaking about all these things and goals and all that stuff, and I had always told him, you know, I'll stand by you through thick and thin, because I'm not going to make that second regret or have another regret of not being by your side from the first time. I also told him that I don't tolerate any sort of, and part of my language, bull crap. I know what I wanted to do, which is accounting and finance, since I was 15 years old, and I am actually the manager over in Phoenix Union High School District in Finance Department. I find myself to be very motivated, and I only like to, and I've told him this too, that I only surround myself with people that are going to benefit my life. That in some way, shape, or form, that they can make me better and build me up, those are the people that I surround myself with. I had told him, and without him telling me, that whatever kind of friends that he was hanging out with was probably not the best choice, because that's why he was in prison for 10 years. But those types of people I don't associate with, and if we're going to hang out, then you got to cut those people out of your life, because I'm not, again, I don't tolerate and I don't hang around that kind of stuff, because I have too much pride in myself, and I also have goals that I reach fairly quickly, but... just that kind of stuff. Just, he was always honest with me. Again, a little anxiety at first, just being out in public. I remember one time we had gone to the mall just so I could go shopping on Black Friday, of course. Sorry, Martine, I dragged you out onto that. And about 5 minutes in, he said that he wanted to go because it was overstimulating. I said, all right, let's go. We'll leave. I know that there's too many people. So I always just wanted to be kind of the rock for him. Not really... arguing or anything like that, just, you know, you tell me about you and how kind of, you know, I've been fortunate enough to not be locked up for 10 years, so I can't put myself in his shoes of being isolated for that long and not being around friends and family. He also made it known that he never wanted to go back and had no intention of going back because he had missed out on his brother's and sister's birthdays, his family for being gone for so long, and had also apologized to me for not being around when I needed him. But again, just that kind of stuff, just reiterating that he was always honest with me from what he wanted to tell me. I never wanted to push or pry information out of him just because he had been gone for so long. But I told him even the other day when I spoke to him that I'm going to be here through thick and thin, supporting him along the way with whatever it needs to be. If he needs new friends, I've got friends. And again, my friends and I, we hang around people that are going to lift us up and not drag us down.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Pease? Thank you very much for coming. Thanks again for being so patient today. Okay, back to you, Mr. Pentland. We're coming up toward the end of your hearing, and if there's no one else that wanted to speak, I'm sorry, before I say that, I want to make sure anybody else didn't want to. Okay. So we're coming up on the end of your hearing, sir, and I just want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement. Is there anything else you've thought of while you've been sitting there that you would want the board to consider without repeating something you've already said, sir?
To be honest, like I told you before in the beginning, I take responsibility for my actions, my faults, but I will move forward with my life and be somebody and get my education and get my job that I want to do.
Okay, that sounds very promising, sir. Thank you.
Here's a question.
Sure, Mr. Johnson has a question.
So, Mr. Pentland, in that statement that you just made, sir, I still never heard you say anything about you're going to do whatever it takes for you to get off the drugs and stop using meth. All you say is about your job. Let me finish, because you got some people here that wholeheartedly are trying to support you, and it appears that they're wholeheartedly trying to support you, and you're not being honest about your drug use, and you can't get off. You could get off of that. You could accomplish all of those things that you say, but I don't hear you saying that's something that you want to do, and you have the support system that you need to do it, but you have to make the determination that you really want to do it, and that has to start out with you being honest about that situation, and that's the part that you keep covering up, and we hear this all the time. Someone says, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to accomplish this, I'm going to do this, but yet they say nothing about a desire, an effort to get off drugs. And honestly, you know, based on your history that we're looking at here, that you've been using methamphetamine from the time that within a month after you got out of prison. And that's what the record shows. And really, for you to move forward, sir, you have to deal with that issue. And I'm not hearing you saying that. I'm not hearing you say that.
I will take classes to get off it. I will go to every single class, even if it takes me 10 years to get off it, I will go to every single class and get help for it. I will do that. And that's what I was doing. Every Tuesday from 5:30 to 6:30, I was going to that class that they told me to go in Glendale.
So, okay, all right, thank you.
Thank you, sir. So, Mr. Pentland, the board is going to go into discussion. We do all discussion in public under the Arizona Open Meeting Law, so we've not discussed your case before right now. So, I just ask that you stay on the phone and just remain silent, and we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Okay.
Okay, sir, thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, the board is now in discussion. This is a very difficult situation because we have Mr. Pentland has a difficult, with his particular crime. He's got to deal with the sex offender issue, which is going to limit where he can live, what he can do, who he can be around. Forever. Your father talked about how frustrating that is. I'm sure it is. But that's the way the law is, and it's just going to be, he's going to have to get used to that aspect of his life. But I hear, first of all, he's got a wonderful family and a wonderful support system, and I don't know how many people that we hear would consider themselves so lucky to have this, because most of them don't have this. They don't have a loving family and people who want them to go straight and fly right. But I'm in agreement with you, Mr. Johnson. I'm not hearing conviction. I heard him say, I'll go to the class that they want me to take from 5 to 6 on Tuesdays. That doesn't say to me, I'm going to that class because I'm going to get off drugs. That says to me, I'm going because they are making me go to that class. So I'll start the discussion with that and Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse. To echo Mr. Johnson, my heart goes out to the family and to Mr. Martin Pentland. It sounds like he has a struggle. I think the support's very real. My concern is, in a very simple way, that he's just not a suitable candidate for community supervision. It almost seems like a recipe for failure in the way that it's in the way that he's managing it. And I recognize he has some time left, but I think he might be better off returning to the community to pursue his own interests and taking this time to really get his mind right and turn the corner and move on with his life. I know that he has the capacity to do that.
Certainly, yes.
But I am concerned about returning him to the community under these circumstances.
And possibly you're referring to the violations, including the knife and the...
Yes.
It's just one little thing after another, and those just can't occur while you're on community supervision.
That's it, ma'am.
Well, if you're not to be, against the drug issue, you haven't been a success unless you get rid of the drugs. But we were not going to have the swab that was mentioned in the sanctions section. He says they never did it, but there was a task laboratory report that says there was a saliva sample collected on the 29th of November 2018 from this person. It was received and tasked on the 3rd of December, and the report is dated the 12th of or the 7th of December. And it shows, probably for amphetamines and methamphetamines, at fairly substantial levels. And, you know, the day he was violated, he had methamphetamine in his system. But he keeps talking about he's, you know, trying to get off the drugs and everything, even when he's talking to the POs. I just don't think he's got a handle on the drug situation. And I personally, as one voting member, his general attitude about following the rules is that I don't think he's real good. So I'm not in favor of returning him to community supervision at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Dan. Mr. Johnson.
I tell you, I really do have some reservations. He do have a drug problem, and I just don't hear him saying, I just don't hear from him that that's what he wants to do. He's like, I'll go to the classes, I'll do this, but not he's not even admitting that he has a drug problem. That bothers me. However, I do understand, I think his father's position, and I think his father's done all the things that he can to do to help him, including, you know, spending the money to find a room for him to stay, making sure that he's not out there on the street, picking him up, taking him all the places that he needs to go. But the family support he has, I would, and that'd be taking a risk too, but I would not be opposed to him having an opportunity to get back out, but he would have to take mandatory, where he must enter and successfully complete a treatment program, and that, you know, any UA or first missed, diluted, or any problems that he have, that he is going to, you know, that the PO is to revoke his parole at that time. But I only say that not based on him, but I just think that the father, you know, who seems to be a strong image and been taking him around, I think the father would try to at least have that opportunity to get him in the program and do it. And if he doesn't do it, he's gonna wind up right back here before us. But he has to make that. I mean, he hasn't admitted it, but my only thing about if I was to give him a break is not because he didn't admit it. It's because such strong support that he has from his family and giving him, you know, giving his father that opportunity to have the second chance for the father to try to help him get right.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any other comments? I'm going to make a motion then, based on information in warrant 2018W3450, our conversation with Mr. Pentland, information for Mr. Turner. I'm going to move to revoke community supervision as Mr. Pentland was delinquent, violated the terms and conditions of supervision, and had lapsed or was about to lapse into criminal ways or company, specifically by using methamphetamine while he was on community supervision. And so that's my motion.
Agreed. I disagree.
Okay, seconded Mr. Neal. Agree. Mr. Quinones. I disagree. Now, if we do have a disagree, we have to come to an agreement.
No.
No, we can split.
The split.
We can split. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I will take your word for it. Okay. Mr. Pentland, the board has voted to revoke your community supervision, so I know that's not what you wanted to hear today, and it's certainly not what your family wanted to hear. But we're hearing lots of support from them. We're not hearing a lot of commitment from you. And you will not be able to achieve the other goals of work and good until you address your drug problem. And until you can say, I have a drug problem, none of that's going to happen. So the board's voted to revoke. We're showing you a release statement. Mr. Turner, you said 12/15, and I thought it was 2/15 of 20. But I could be wrong. February 15th of 2020, and that's a 10-month difference. So we would definitely want to get that.
2/15.
Okay. So February 5th of 2020. So it would be a little over a year that you have remaining. So as Mr. Quinones or Mr. Neal, one of those two said, this remaining time can be used for you to, first of all, get a year of sobriety, and second of all, to have a good plan in your head so that when you are released, you've got a good, solid plan. You've already got a good, solid support system, and they're there ready for you. So we certainly wish you the best, Mr. Pentland. We have to make very tough decisions on behalf of the citizens, and that's our decision today, sir. So we thank you for participating in the hearing, and certainly thank your family for coming and being so patient and waiting all day. So this will conclude your hearing, sir. And if you'd give the phone, just lay the phone down and let the CO3 know that you're finished. Thank you, sir. Thanks, everyone.